The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Last week, we were going through 50 etiquette things that we need to know in this day and age. And we left off with number 25, which is RSVP promptly and correctly. So let's finish the rest of the 50 of them that they listed. The RSV promptly and correctly. Hosting a wedding, birthday party, or other event takes a lot of work, money, and time. And it's rude not to give a host a prompt reply to their invitation. Whether the invite is paper or digital, wedding invitation etiquette says that RSVPing by the date requested is a sign of respect and gratitude for being invited. Always RSVP via the method indicated in the invitation. Digital response, QR code, paper reply card, text, or email. It's sadly not uncommon these days to not RSVP because you're not sure if you want to go or you think you might be better, you might get a better offer, so you decide the day of. That is not okay. This is one of the fundamental etiquette rules that everyone should follow. Don't bring a supplies plus one. Weddings are expensive and are often budgeted for an exact number of people. Only bring an extra person if your invitation explicitly offers you a plus one, and if you RSVP, that you'd be bringing another person, says Groats. In addition, note that only guests whose names are on the envelope are invited. So if the invite isn't specifically addressed to you and a guest, plan on attending solo. Under no circumstances should you write an extra line on your RSVP. Don't take pictures of a wedding ceremony with your phone. Now, that's one I haven't heard before. Just like you need to wear appropriate wedding attire, you should behave appropriately, starting with turning your phone off. Leave the photography to the hired wedding photographer. Trying to snap your own pictures or videos, particularly of critical moments like the first kiss or the cake cutting, can ruin the shot for the pros, ruin the view for other guests, and may mean the couple won't get the pictures they want. However, it's usually fine to snap candid shots during the reception, as long as you're careful not to get in the way of the professional photographer. Don't drink to your own toast. A common etiquette mistake is drinking when other people are toasting you. As the person being honored by the toast, simply enjoy the moment. Other people will lift their glasses and toast to you, and you can acknowledge it with a smile, a slight bow of your head, and an expression of gratitude. Don't request cash for gifts or post your Venmo. It's becoming more and more common for people to ask for cash or gift cards at weddings, birthday and baby shower gifts. Some people are even adding their Cash App or Venmo tags, requesting that guests wire them money directly. This is an etiquette no-no, especially when it comes to wedding gift etiquette. It's not so much that they're asking for money, but that they're telling people what gift to give, Groats said. Part of the fun of gifting a gift is selecting something special for that person. One polite way around this is to add gift cards to your gift registry, among other items, allowing guests the option of giving you money if they choose. Attach a return receipt to baby gifts. Brand new humans need a lot of things, and the soon-to-be parents may not know exactly what they need or their needs will change after the baby comes. Sonograms have been known to get the gender wrong. This means it's more likely the recipient will need to return or exchange a baby gift than other types of gifts. Make it easy on the parents and follow the proper baby shower etiquette by attaching a return receipt. Another option is to buy it directly from their baby registry, as stores generally allow things purchased from registries to be returned or exchanged. Ask about food preferences. Hosting a party? Inviting a new friend out for lunch? Arranging a play date for your child's friend? Take a minute and ask whether they have any food allergies, food intolerances, religious standards, or special diets you should be aware of, says Sokolowski. You don't have to cater to every individual whim, but it's polite to ask in advance so that at the very least they can make their own food arrangements. And if you're having a buffet, be sure to label foods with the most common allergens, like nuts or gluten, and that's really important. I had a friend who passed out because somebody didn't label one of their things with nuts. Bring a gift for the host. If someone was kind enough to invite you to their party, it's polite to bring a gift for the host, like flowers or a bottle of wine. It's also nice to offer to bring a dish or a drink to share, even if they don't take you up on it. Heading to a get-together during the festive season? brush up on these important holiday party etiquette rules, which we won't do because that's another page. Sorry about that. Say proper goodbyes. It can feel awkward, time-consuming, or tricky to say goodbye at a social event. So it's understandable that you might want to duck out unnoticed like an Irish exit, which just means you leave without telling anybody you're leaving. While that may be okay in certain situations, at a formal or small event, resist the temptation and instead take the time to say goodbye and express thanks at least to the host. Otherwise, they may feel upset or worried when they realize you're not there. You can be firm with your boundary of leaving while still being polite. Call an Uber for drunk guests. A good guest won't get sloppy drunk at someone else's party, and a good host won't let their guest drive drunk. You can arrange for them to stay at your home, for someone to pick them up, or call them a taxi or Uber, says Soloski. Note, many rideshare services will not pick up people who are heavily inebriated or will charge extra for the ride. Acknowledge gifts with a thank you note or text. Gift givers love to know that A, their gift was received, and B, the recipient enjoyed it. This can be as simple as a quick thank you message via text or email saying, I got the cookbook in the mail today, and I am so excited to try some of the recipes. Thank you for your thoughtfulness. Larger gifts, including cash or items worth more than $100, should be acknowledged with a phone call and or a handwritten thank you card. Number 36. Send separate thank you messages. Yes, it may be faster to send one big thank you text, but each person deserves their own acknowledgement and gratitude. Wording can be similar, but each message should be sent separately, even for group gifts, unless there are no individual names on the card. Number 37. Follow the grieving family's lead. Funeral etiquette can be varied based upon religion, culture, location, and families, so it's easy to feel unsure and worried about doing the wrong thing. If you're not sure about the protocol, follow the lead of the grieving loved ones. If they wear black or cover their head, then you should too. Not comfortable asking? There's a lot of information online about every type of funeral, like Jewish funeral etiquette for non-Jews. In case someone you know is going through depression, there's things you can say, and I'm not going to go to that right now. Number 38. Don't use terms of endearment for people who aren't close loved ones. These days, calling someone you don't know, like a server or a cashier or a customer, names like sweetheart, honey, missy, darling, handsome, cutie, or the like, is a huge faux pas, unless you live in the South. Then, of course, it's pretty standard. While you may think you're just being friendly or complimentary, this could come across as patronizing at best and harassing at worst. Take the time to learn the person's name and use it appropriately. If you don't know their name, Miss, Ms., or Sir, are all fine. Number 39, wait your turn. Whether you're waiting in line at stores, waiting for your turn at the gas pump, or asking for a table at a restaurant, be patient and wait your turn. People come up with an astonishing number of reasons why this simple rule doesn't apply to them. But unless it's a true emergency or you are not an exception, open the door for the person behind you. Whoever reaches the door first is the person who should open it, regardless of gender. It's simply a gesture of human kindness and empathy. While you should certainly hold the door for the person behind you, you don't have to get stuck holding the door open for a whole stream of people. Nod to the person, next person, and pass the door to them as you walk through. Scoot over if you're the first one in a taxi. The first person into a taxi or Uber should scoot all the way across the seat to make room for others. Don't make other people climb over you or walk into traffic to get to the other door. Don't assume gender, sexuality, or relationship status. Boy, that's certainly become a modern thing. Due to differences in gender and sexuality, many relationships are different from what you may think at first glance. For instance, many people would assume their male co-worker's spouse was a woman, or a female friend's partner was a man. Boy, I did that by one time. That was a mistake. But now, not only should you not assume marital status, many people don't like wearing rings, or they wear rings on their wedding finger that have other meanings. You shouldn't assume gender either. Listen to how people introduce themselves and loved ones and then follow their lead. If you're unsure, it's fine to politely ask. Never ask, where are you really from? It's okay to ask when once they are from, but accept whatever answer they give, says Parker. Do not follow up with, no, where are you really from? If someone appears to be a different ethnicity than you or has an accent, it's natural to be curious about their history. But it's impolite to ask outright, as you're basing your question only on their skin color, features, dress, or voice. Instead, ask people polite, non-invasive questions about themselves. And if you chat long enough, your question will likely be answered naturally in conversation. Be on time. Sometimes being late is just a bad circumstance. But if you're late often, then that's a choice you're making. When you are constantly late, it says that your time is more important than everyone else's. Polite manners say you should do your best to be on time as much as possible and to let people know if something has come up and you'll be late. But if it's an ongoing problem, you should make a real effort to learn to stop being chronically late. And I have a little story about that. My father-in-law was involved in a search for their minister for their church. And there were five people, two women and three men. And one of the women was always a half an hour late. So finally, after about the third or fourth time she showed up a half an hour late, they finally decided to tell her that the actual time was 30 minutes later than what it was supposed to be. And that way she got there, she thought she was getting there 30 minutes late, but she was actually getting there right on time. That's very irritating. Number 45, walk with the flow. In most places, it's considered too polite to keep to the right on sidewalks, stairs, and trails, allowing people to pass you on the left. She adds that you should keep moving with the flow and be careful not to block the sidewalk with a large group. If you need to stop, step aside and don't block building entrances. Number 46, change your baby's diaper in the bathroom. This might seem like a strange rule to have to articulate, but you shouldn't put a poopy butt on places where people eat or sit. It's bad etiquette to change your baby's diaper on a restaurant bench or table, on a park table, or a plane seat, or in a cafe table. Yet these are all things that have happened. Locate a diaper station in a restroom or change the baby in your car. At someone's house, ask where's a good place to do your dirty work. Then fold up the dirty diaper and take it to an outside garbage can. Keep your dog on a leash. Many dog owners think it's okay for their pooch to run off leash. But animals, even well-trained ones, can be unpredictable, as can little humans in the area. Good etiquette says that if you are in an area that requires leashes, then you keep your dog on a leash. If you want to let your dog run free, take Fido to an off-leash dog park, where you should also keep a few dog park etiquette tips in mind. Clean up your dog's mess. It's the number one rule of etiquette for dog owners. If your dog poops, you pick it up in a plastic bag and dispose of it in a public garbage can, not the neighbor's. And yes, you must pick it up, even if you don't think anyone saw you or you think no one will notice. It's your responsibility as the owner to carry bags with you. Ask before bringing your pet. This is number 49. It's becoming more and more common to see dogs under tables in restaurants, cats in backpacks in stores, and other animals traveling with their humans. However, you don't know how other people feel about your pet or if they're allergic, and it's bad form to put them in that position. The polite thing to do? Avoid bringing pets into public places unless they're specifically invited, and ask before bringing your pet to someone's home. While you're at it, also explore the polite habits that pet groomers dislike. Number 50, wipe down equipment at the gym, and this is really irritating. Attention gym goers, anything that you sweat on needs to be wiped down with sanitizing spray or wipes. Whether it's a weight bench, bike seat, treadmill, locker room chair, or whatever else, always wipe down equipment after using it, even if you don't see any visible sweat. Noting that this is a basic gym etiquette. This goes double if you spit or bleed on equipment. If it's a small mess, you can clean it up yourself with the disinfecting spray or wipes available. But anything beyond a drop or two, you need to alert gym staff so it can be properly and thoroughly sanitized. Well, why are you doing etiquette things? Why don't we look at 11 netiquette guidelines to follow for respectful online interactions, since most of us spend time on our computers? Don't get caught using poor netiquette. Experts share the best practices for online behavior. It all happened so fast. In just under two decades, we've learned to communicate online through texting etiquette, email etiquette, and social platforms. From sharing family photos with far-away relatives and making professional connections and commenting on political or social issues you're passionate about. The online world is an open forum for sharing. If you've ever seen online acquaintances duke it out in the comment section or cringing at old Instagram photos that haunt you before a job interview, you know that with advantages come etiquette pitfalls. Internetiquette, your guide for an online life that you can feel good about. No emotional hangover is necessary. What is netiquette? Just like it sounds, netiquette is the etiquette on the net. Even though online platforms can seem like the Wild West at times, there's no need to add to the chaos. The digital world still requires rules of conduct. We've asked two experts to give us their most important rules of the web. Parents, don't share it. That the last word is share, S-H-A-R-E-N-T. I think the most important rule for me is that parent, do not share your children's pictures or private information online, says Jennifer Zoo Scott, a technology executive and mom of two. Because of user agreements, even when you post to a private account on platforms such as Facebook or Instagram, that content is no longer yours, she says. Additionally, others can screenshot or download your pictures and post without you knowing. When your kids become adults, they can decide what content to share about themselves, but it's not fair to make those decisions for them while they're still children. Even on her private Instagram account, which is only visible to close friends and family, Sue Scott never posts pictures of her children. I cannot emphasize this enough. Honor your children's will when they can actually make their decisions about what kind of digital presence they want as adults. Don't take that away by posting pictures out there without their consent. Use respectful language. It's important to remember that everything you do online leaves a digital footprint. If you wouldn't say something or use certain language in person, then refrain from doing it online. Using common etiquette, including no name-calling, cursing or writing, or anything deliberately offensive, is all wise, whether you're writing an email, social media post, or conversing in chat rooms. Keep an eye on privacy. Privacy is freedom, says Zoo Scott. It's always easier to share than take information back, so think twice before you share. Beyond improving your online security and avoiding sharing your data to online scammers, you must also keep in mind new technologies such as artificial intelligence, which can use photos and audio that we give away for free on our social media accounts. In the near future, I think it will be a complete privilege for a person to not have images of their lives online, she says, via user agreements and data brokers. Some third parties can use your voice, your face, and your image to create something completely against your will. So now might be the time to take a hard look at what you're putting out there. And fact check before reposting. We've all been there. We see a piece of incendiary content and our first urge is to take action and share. It's super easy to get your blood boiling, but often what we see could be taken out of context. Headlines and social posts may be written in an attempt to anger users and keep their attention. Not for some lofty purpose, but to make more money. When people get angry, they tend to interact with each other more, and the more attention someone can generate, the more revenue dollars a piece of social media content can generate. Proper netiquette says to pause and fact-check. With growing concerns about misinformation and disinformation, it's best to look at everything with a critical eye, says James Halber, who studies online interactions and is an associate professor of industrial organization and psychology at Alder University. When you're finding information online, always go to the source. For Albert and his students, that means tracing claims back to peer-reviewed articles rather than relying on Wikipedia. It's good to keep a watchful eye on that material. It may not be true. Additionally, Zoo Scott says to remember that the online world is international. A piece of content may have a cultural context you're not familiar with, so think before you jump to conclusions. People have a tendency to use their own lens to judge other people without appreciating the cultural context. Don't judge too quickly. Debate like a gentle person. If it's a controversial topic you'd avoid at Thanksgiving dinner, consider avoid debating about it online. But if it's something you feel strongly about, there are certainly ways to debate respectfully. While online debates can be notoriously tricky, hence the term flame wars, Sue Scott says you don't necessarily have to shy away from participating. I think having a debate on issues is a wonderful thing, she says, as long as you're open to learning. Instead of trying to overwhelm others with superior opinions, think of it as an exercise in mutual listening, where the desired result is that everybody learns more about the truth. Good online debate netiquette means holding the spirit to seek for truth, even if the truth is very different from what I originally thought. If you want to speak up in a cordial way about a troubling post, a good place to start is asking where the information came from. It's a way of challenging something without saying, hey, this is wrong. You have to take your emotion out of it, and focusing on whether the content is factual helps to do so. Take it offline. If someone is offended by something you've posted or by a comment you've made, you can sense things may become heated. Halbert has a simple technique rule. Take it offline. I would call my friend up and say, hey, dude, what's going on? When responding to a negative comment, rather than having a drawn-out fight on social media for the whole world to see, he recommends trying to resolve the issue as solidly as possible. And to do that, he says, it's better to pick up the phone. The problem is we don't call people anymore. Posts and emails can be misconstrued because it's hard to convey and detect tone. Perhaps your friend, or if you didn't understand how the post or comment was intended, a phone call can clear that up quickly. Don't confuse adding friends for being a good friend. We may feel connected to distant family members or to old friends because we see their new post, but it's a false sense of connection. We don't know what they're struggling with. You know that when you talk to them on the phone every day and when you have a personal relationship with them. Research has shown that especially for Generation Z, while socializing online can create a sense of connection, it can also elicit a sense of isolation. That's because we tend to compare the overwhelming positive posts we see with our own more nuanced lives and feel that we fall short. It is important to remember that online connections cannot replace community and building in-person relationships. If the internet is your primary way of connecting with people, that's very, very dangerous. Be professional, even on your personal account. Not following netiquette rules can be just as damaging as resume mistakes. If your personal account is public, or if you only have one account for both professional and personal interactions, recognize how those two worlds are connected. When you express yourself on social media, you should be aware of business etiquette, because you're not always representing yourself, you're representing a lot of other people, especially as a professional. Before posting something, he always considers the context and who's going to read it. Another solution is to maintain a public professional account and a personal one only visible to a small group of trusted friends and family, says Zhu Scott, who has opted for this approach. Sharing too much personal sensitive information can be inappropriate and risky. Even if you're a social media influencer, be smart about it and be strategic. And choose your connections wisely. This netiquette rule can protect your privacy and professional image. Be careful about who you connect with, both experts say. Zukot says she has learned how to say no. She's constantly turning down friend requests with a polite message explaining why. As for Halbert, I'm very careful with whom I connect, he says. Rather than adding anyone who asks, he maintains a LinkedIn network of connections. Excuse me, my computer just did a burp, so hang on a second. I'll repeat part of that. As for Halbert, I'm very careful with whom I connect, he says. Rather than anyone who asks, he maintains a LinkedIn network of connections with students, colleagues, and professionals in his field, whose work he admires. Rather than following a particular content creators, he follows professional organizations. You may feel pressured to like everything that friends or professional connections post, but if you interact sparingly, just be polite. But Halbert announces the opposite. First, liking or commenting on a post will encourage a platform's algorithm to show you more posts by that person or similar content, which works against you if you're using your account to stay abreast of what colleagues or friends are doing. But more important, most platforms will tell your entire network that you've liked a post, and for better or worse, that could become the basis for judgment, especially if it's controversial or even an Instagram scam or Facebook scam. Halbert reserves likes for professional work he truly admires. Keep it simple and stress-free. One netiquette rule that can help set boundaries for your own well-being is to consider reducing the number of social media accounts you use. You don't realize that is an extra stressor you're putting on your life. When you've got multiple accounts, you have to check this one, you got to check that one, you got to do that one, you're afraid of leaving someone out, people are waiting on your response, what do they think about your response? All this adds extra stress. Despite the fact that his research focuses on the online world, Halbert himself has only one social media account, his LinkedIn. He knows he would have more connections if he put his personal life across various social media platforms. But for him, that's a small price to pay for less stress. And that's the less etiquette. Here's a commentary. Target is slashing prices on everyday items. Here's what you need to know. Want to shop smart? Target's price reductions just might land you significant savings on essentials. While skyrocketing prices can make for some silly inflation memes, the debt in our wallets is nothing to laugh about. According to the U.S. Department of Agriculture, food prices increased by 0.4% from March to April 2024. Since April 2023, they're up a staggering 3.5%. To combat inflation and help shoppers save money, Target announced that it was cutting costs on essential items throughout the summer. Target's price reductions will hit 5,000 items in key departments, including groceries, household essentials, and health and beauty. As of May 20th, around 1,500 items have seen reduced pricing, while the rest will be gradually reduced over the next few months. Here's what else you need to know. Which products will see lower prices? Target is focusing on cutting costs on everyday essentials, including food. According to the company's press release, grocery items such as milk, meat, soda, fresh produce, snacks, yogurt, peanut butter, and coffee will see decreasing pricing. Additionally, Target will reduce prices on household essentials such as diapers, paper towels, and pet food. And here's a Target secret to keep in mind. These price slashing efforts won't only be on Target's own brands, Good & Gather, Everspring, etc. They will also be on name brand items including Huggies, Aveeno, and Johnsonville. How much is Target lowering prices? Target is not offering a flat rate across the board price cuts, which mean new pricing is specific to each item and not based on a certain percentage. According to the listed prices in Target stores and online via their website or app, decreases will be between 20 cents and more than $1. For example, a bag of Good & Gather sea salt roasted nuts dropped from $6.89 to $5.29, and a package of Purina One chicken and gravy cat food went from $2.39 to $1.99. If you want to lower your monthly bills, take advantage of these savings, no matter how small. They can add up to a significant cost reduction. Will this continue beyond summer? While Target is advertising these price cuts as a means to help shoppers save this summer, these deals will continue after August. A Target representative has confirmed to Reader's Digest that these are new everyday low prices which will help out shoppers' wallets and many seasons to come. We know consumers are feeling pressure to make the most of their budget, and Target is here to help them save more, says Rick Gomez, Executive Vice President and Chief Food, Essentials, and Beauty Officer at Target, in a recent press release. Our teams work hard to deliver great value every day, and these new lower prices across thousands of items will add additional big savings for the millions of consumers who shop Target each week for their everyday needs. What does this mean for shoppers? These reduced costs on thousands of Target items should help shoppers save this summer on essential needs. And while there are plenty of Target saving hacks, one of the best is taking advantage of Target Circle deals, which are offered in addition to the price cuts mentioned. Shoppers can also save an extra 5% on their purchases if they pay using the Target Circle card. Looking to get the most bang for your buck? Shop generic. Most of Target's basic brand products are listed under $10, while its everyday essential brand, Up & Up, lists most of its 2,000 products for under $15. Trash Walker. Anna Sachs finds treasure in New York City's garbage. And there's a picture of a young woman, rather attractive, has red hair pulled back in a bun. She's got a big shopping cart with her, and she's going through bags of trash. New York City's trash is this woman's treasure, and she's using her platform to fight our culture of excess waste. Working at an investment bank in New York City in the mid-2010s, Anna Sachs was living the life, just not the life she wanted. Sure, she was happy, but she wanted to do something that felt important and was fulfilling on a deeper level. Some people seeking meaning might read a self-help book, try a little recycling or upcycling, or perhaps volunteer a few hours a week. Sachs packed up her life and moved to Connecticut for 3 months to participate in ADAMA, a Jewish farming program focusing on sustainable living and growing sustainable food. When she returned to New York, it was with a new purpose and various new skills to make her dreams a reality. One of the things that really struck to me from ADAMA, which means earth in Hebrew, was how little waste they produced and how they handled the waste they did have, primarily through composting, she says. And I just thought, Why aren't we doing that here? I'd walk around my neighborhood and was shocked at how many bags of waste were piled up. I began to wonder what is actually in all those bags and recycling bins on the curb. Instead of getting stuck in a never-ending cycle of climate anxiety, she embarked on a mission that would make her one of the most influential climate change activists on social media today. Trolling the Trash. Adama programmed opened Sack's eyes to the damage consumer culture is doing at a local, national, and global level, and the need to find solutions. So in 2016, she took a master composting course, and started with a food rescue program. She found her calling in 2017. To quench her curiosity and help her get food and household supplies, she began trash walking. During jaunts around her neighborhood, Sachs picks through garbage to look for reusable items. Soon her trash walks expanded to include corporate dumpsters and residential trash. Surprisingly, she discovered a wide array of really great stuff, like clothing, designer accessories, dinnerware, and food, and started documenting her finds on Instagram and TikTok. There's a picture of a whole bunch of stuff she found here, including an unopened box of Cookie Crisp, Spiky Shiraka, Hippies, two cans of dog food, a big thing of chocolate. All of this is unopened. Under the name The Trash Walker, Sachs quickly gained popularity for educational, funny, and surprising videos that highlight the problems with consumerism and share information about how to live a more sustainable lifestyle. The root issue is overproduction, which leads to overconsumption, which leads to an immense amount of waste, she says. Think, for a moment, about your overcrowded closet. Fast fashion makes it easy to buy the latest trends for cheap, but those clothes can end up in the trash even if you sell or donate them. It's a point Sachs made in a TikTok video exposing a mountain of thrift store trash. In it, a black trash bags filled with clothes crowd the sidewalk and hold the goods the store couldn't sell. It was very upsetting to see, but also not surprising, said Sachs. Her image superimposed over fat bags overflowing with clothing. We make too much clothing as a society. We need to produce less. Kicking goods to the curb. The lesson from Sachs' trash walking isn't just that we need to produce less stuff. It's that we need to stop tossing perfectly good items in the trash, too. Dive through any retail store's garbage and you'll soon agree. I don't usually gasp or get shocked, but this is shocking, says Sachs in a 2021 TikTok video, in which she unearthed 16 unopened tissue boxes and two rolls of toilet paper from Duane Reade's garbage pile. In another video, she salvages three bags of Kit Kats from the drugstore. But waste is far from Duane Reade's problem. She regularly finds bags of candy and unopened boxes of tampons outside other drugstores, flowers outside florist shops, and decorations outside party stores. One party city hall brought in about $3,000 worth of goods, most still in packaging. And in one thrift store's trash, she found an unopened Pottery Barn kids blanket retailing for $60 and a box of floral dinnerware. There's also plenty of food waste from New York City's public schools. I think the New York public school system do a better job of managing their inventory, she says, while rifling through hundreds of bags of mini carrots. So this just doesn't go end up being wasted as it currently is. Getting to the root of the problem. The fact is, corporations and other organizations like the public schools often choose to destroy or throw out items rather than give them away to people who might need them. A big reason for this waste is the way our current tax laws are structured. Retailers who destroy merchandise could claim the cost as a loss on their taxes and be refunded any tariffs. If they give away goods, they can claim only a small amount as a charitable deduction on their taxes. This gives companies a financial incentive to be wasteful instead of giving away goods. Employees' hands are often tied when it comes to disposal protocol. Employees are not allowed to take this home, Zach says, while filming her discovery of the trash tissue boxes from Duane Reade. By the way, for those who don't know, Duane Reade is a big drugstore chain in the New York area. That would be considered theft, and they'd be fired for doing so. The same thing for donating. Even if an employee wanted to donate it, they could be fired for theft for donating. Ideally, companies would donate the things they can't sell to free stores or directly to the needy instead of tossing the items in the trash. Sachs also calls for bipartisan donate, don't dump legislation to stop corporations from kicking items to the curb. Corporations need to do better about reducing their waste, she says. But voters also need to speak up and get these policies changed. According to Sachs, the COVID-19 pandemic didn't spur any significant changes in how companies handle waste, something that really surprised her. Unfortunately, I think a lot of businesses are operating as usual, and they are in denial about the climate crisis and the fundamental changes they need to make. We repeatedly said that the ideal of corporations self-regulating or voluntarily changing is a myth. This concern has led her to advocate for stronger legislation. One New York State bill she supports is the Fashion Act, which targeted environmental and labor rights violation within the fashion industry supply chains. It combats environmental degradation by requiring companies to meet science-based targets for reducing carbon emissions, lessen the environmental impact of chemicals used in garment production, and stop the pollution of waterways with toxic waste. We need government and laws to enforce consequences for violating basic human rights and environmental standards. Effecting change in other ways. Sachs' videos have gone viral many times, causing shockwaves through the industry she calls out. Her most popular video of 2021 showed a brand new luxury Coach handbags that had been slashed by employees before being trashed, a way of damaging out unwanted inventory to take advantage of the tax loophole, and perhaps as a way to keep the luxury brand exclusive. This despite the sustainability commitment on Coach's website, which says the company encourages fixing damaged bags and is part of the circular economy. The 57-second TikTok went live in October, and a week later, Coach announced changes to his policy, stating it would no longer destroy inventory in-store returns. Sachs discovered that it would, however, still destroy other unwanted inventory, like if they don't like the stitching or color. In 2019, she called out CVS for throwing away a dumpster full of perfectly good medical supplies, including much-needed baby formula. She wrote the CEO suggesting CVS form local donation partnerships. In response, the company said it would look into the matter. After another video of the CVS dumpster diving went viral, the company committed to switching away from plastic bags. Holding companies accountable for their promises is another one of her goals. In 2016, Starbucks made big news when it announced that it would donate all unsold food instead of throwing it out. By 2020. Sachs' 2020 video showed that despite the corporation's promise, it was still throwing out tons of good food. In 2022, Starbucks recommitted, saying it would reduce total food loss and waste to its U.S. operations by 50% by 2030. She's also amplifying messages from other trash tivets, I guess that's like activists, to get more concrete results. In March 2021, she shared a video from Jonathan Carr, who found a live parrot at a Petco dumpster. Social media outrage was so immediate and intense that the company was forced to open a formal investigation. Going from trash to treasure, and there's this picture here of boxes of Cheerios, Oreo cookies, M&Ms, Reese's peanut butter cups, vitamins, drinks, all kinds of stuff that were thrown out. They say one man's trash is another treasure, and that couldn't be more true in Sachs' case. Like an urban treasure hunter, she's uncovered some gems hiding in New York City garbage bags. An antique Russell Wright Saturn Punch Bowl set. It's now part of the permanent collection at the Cooper Hewitt Smithsonian Design Museum. A ball of expensive Tiffany necklaces. She and her friend spent hours untangling them. A beautiful urn full of ashes from a pet cat. It's a good thing I read the plaque on the bottom, or I might have opened it, she says. A green velvet opera jacket. She kept it and still wears it. A framed page of an actual medieval book. It now hangs in her home. A set of light new rattan chairs at a coffee table. They're in her living room. A collection of toddler board books. She gifted them to her niece. The finest chocolates. She saves some to eat and gives others away. A set of vintage china. Fresh flowers. Stores throw these out a lot, she says. I almost always have fresh flowers in my home. New wool socks, holiday decorations and lights, planters with plants still in them. She says she does her best to keep the plants thriving. Sex has also realized how these treasures in New York City dumpsters can be transformed into new creations. In fact, one of her January 2020 videos showcases textile artist Deborah Rappaport's upcycled treasures. Inspired by Rappaport's creativity, Sachs has embraced the beauty in seeing objects for their potential, like turning a toilet paper roll into a feather boa or making paper towels into hats. Rapoport is a big inspiration to me, Sack says. Her way of looking at the world is radical and beautiful. Sharing the wealth. Trash walking has given Sachs a nearly endless supply of clothing, food, appliances, dishes, glassware, flatware, books, picture frames, candles, and artwork. Some she keeps for herself, but at this point her own home is pretty well stocked, so she focuses on distributing much of her hauls to others. First, she tries giving them informative family, friends, or individuals she knows may need a specific item. Then she takes the remaining items to shelters or free stores so other New Yorkers can benefit from her treasure hunting. Sometimes she drops off shelf-stable goods at a community fridges, which allow anyone to take food for free. What she won't do is give them to thrift stores. The retailers throw out a lot of donations, which she then picks through. Sack's main focus is simply getting people to pay attention to how many unnecessary things they buy and then throw away. Once you become conscious of the way you consume, you can see ways to improve, she says. Here are some of suggestions for wasting less food and other goods. Compost your food scraps. Learn how to grow food sustainably at home. Repair items instead of buying new ones immediately. Store and reuse seasonal items. Purchase secondhand goods. Participate in swap or free groups in your area. Donate nice but unwanted items. Recycle. Just make sure you know how to recycle the right way. Too many people just throw anything and everything into recycle bin, which makes their whole bag unusable. Do your own trash walk. Learning to trash walk. The concept is simple. Walk around your area and look in dumpsters or through garbage, then rescue usable items. Exercise and free stuff. What's not to love? If you want to try it, Sachs offers these tips. Carry reusable tote bags or reusable grocery bags with all your time. You never know when you come across a treasure of someone else's trash. Wear puncture-proof gloves when going through garbage. Don't open locked containers or trash areas. If you open a bag, make sure it's closed and secured when you're done. Leave the area cleaner than you found it. Look for a prepackaged foods and steer clear of things that need refrigeration. If you love trash walking, but can't spare the space in your home, do what Sachs does. Offer items to loved ones, donate them to free stores and shelters, or post them in local recycling or trading social media groups to exchange with others. And if trash walking isn't an activity you'd like to pursue, Sachs finds ways to get involved that you feel passionate about. We need to move away from the one-person hero narrative, she says. This is about every single person contributing to in the way that only they can in their own unique way. How about a little consumer reports? Product update. Your home security toolkit. From locks and video doorbells to whole house security systems, we got the best products to protect your place. And there's a picture here of a doorbell camera, a home security system, and a door lock. Our homes are usually where we feel safest, and that's why it's so important to keep them secure. A burglary robs you not only of your possessions, but also your comfort and stability. But there's good news on this front. Conventional burglaries, people breaking into homes to steal valuables, have dropped by 70% since the late 80s, according to the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Hundreds of thousands of these crimes still occur each year, however, and they have been joined by a rising tide of package thefts from front porches, an act now known as porch piracy. To combat burglaries, both in and front of your door and inside, you need the right home security gear. A strong door lock is a critical starting point, whether you live in an apartment or a townhouse, a house, or widely separated from your neighbors. A video doorbell camera is a great addition for almost everyone, but it's especially important if your home opens onto the street, whether you have neighbors nearby or not. And finally, security professionals also recommend a home security system, whether you live in a freestanding house with easy access to ground-level windows or way up in a high-rise apartment. Having a security system is no longer a luxury, and everyone should have a level of personal home security, including apartment dwellers, says Kirk McDonald, president of McGuard Security Advisors, an industry consulting group. Large apartment complexes may have a roving security officer or a doorman, which is a good thing, but those people need to take breaks, may become distracted, or miss warning signs of a criminal. Investing in a home security system can be expensive, but you can recoup part by that price by applying for a discount on your homeowner's insurance. And keep in mind that in addition to guarding you against break-ins, these systems can respond in case of medical emergencies, fires, and floods. Choosing the right lock. The first step in home security is to install a good deadbolt on your front door. Deadbolt on your front door. The type of lock can vary based upon your preferences. Deadbolts that sell in our lab, such as the Bolle Grade 2 lock for $150, have proved that they can withstand lock picking, yes, like in the movies, being opened by a criminal equipped with a cordless drill, or simply getting kicked in. Quality varies widely, and you can't tell how secure a lock is just by looking at it, or even by buying one from a reputable brand. The same company may sell both excellent and low-quality products. The locks we all grow up with open with a key, but there are good reasons to consider buying an electronic lock that has a keypad, which you open using a pin. Many of these locks let you use the key as well. You can give the pin to family members as well as routine visitors like dog walkers and housekeepers, which is much safer than leaving a key under the doormat. A number of locks with keypads, such as the high-rated Yell Assure Lock 2, $260, lets you lock and unlock a door remotely from an app. Let's say you're out running errands and can't remember if you locked up. The app will tell you. These smart locks are also great for letting in visitors such as a plumber or cleaning service while you're away. The app will keep time-stamped logs of who comes and goes so you can see exactly when they finished up and left. That's the basic idea behind smart locks, but there are several more variations that you might find useful. Locks such as the Quickset Halo Touch for $270 offer fingerprint scanners for unlocking the door, a handy feature if you tend to forget pins. Some newer locks, such as Schlage Encore Plus Wi-Fi, let you unlock a door with the tap of an Apple Watch or iPhone, the same way you can pay for things in stores. Finally, there's a way to get benefits of a smart lock without replacing all your hardware. Retrofit models such as the August Wi-Fi Smart Lock for $200 replace your existing deadbolt's interior thumb turn knob, while the rest of your lock remains unchanged. The lock can now be controlled through an app, but you can continue to using your existing keys when you want to. You can install a new deadbolt yourself if you don't want to hire a locksmith. One piece of advice, though, use 3-inch screws to install the box strike plate, where the deadbolt enters the door frame instead of the shorter screws included in most packages. This will strengthen your lock against kick-ins. Adding video doorbells and cameras. Video doorbells are security cameras combined with an intercom and an old-fashioned doorbell for a button or with a button for visitors to press. They're a great way to see who comes and goes as well as catch thieves in the act so you can attempt to stop them, say by yelling at them through the doorbell's two-way intercom or by calling the police. They can also provide valuable video evidence if your home is burglarized. Secure benefits aside, video doorbells are simply handy to own. They serve as the digital equivalent of a doorman, allowing you to greet visitors when you're in a distant part of the house or not home at all, give instructions for package deliveries, and even take messages like answering machine. These devices have caught on quickly since being introduced around 10 years ago. 30% of Americans now have one in their homes, according to a nationally representative survey of 2,070 adults conducted by Consumer Reports in November of 2023. That number has doubled from 15% in early 2020, according to a previous CR survey. Some video doorbells have color night vision to help you identify people approaching your home more easily. Many models like the TPK-Link Casa Smart for $40 also let you set up customizable monitoring zones. That means you can receive alerts when there's motion in some spots, like your walkway, but not in others, like a busy street in front of your house. A growing number of doorbells can also tell the difference between people, packages, vehicles, and animals. They can then show only important alerts. For example, you might want to hear about the person in your driveway at midnight, but skip an alert about an animal, which might be that pesky raccoon on the prowl again. Here are two more details to consider. First, all video doorbells can record video, but they store it either on a micro SD card, like the one you might have in a digital camera, or online. If you choose a doorbell with online storage, you need to pay for an ongoing fee. For example, the highly rated Simply Self doorbell for $175 has a subscription fee of $10 per month. Second, consider the power source for your video doorbell. Only about half of Americans have low-voltage doorbell wiring in their homes, according to CR's 2023 survey. If your home includes this wiring, you have the option of buying a hardwired video doorbell. Doing that means you'll never have to worry about recharging your batteries. It's not difficult for handy homeowners to install one of these, but you can also hire an electrician to do the job. The other option is a battery-powered video doorbell. These can be mounted anywhere. They're helpful if your home doesn't have a doorbell wiring, or the existing wiring is a spot that won't give a camera a great view. You can usually charge the batteries with a USB cable. A handful of battery-powered doorbells can also be connected to small solar panels, available as accessories, that slowly charge the devices. You can boost your security by adding additional external cameras that can see parts of your property not visible from the doorbell. A very promising new version is the floodlight camera, which comes with two bright lights. They're especially useful if you're worried about a car theft, because most of them have loud sirens you can set off manually to scare away thieves. Floodlight cameras, such as highly rigged Google Nest Cam with a floodlight, are best suited for wide-open areas outside your home, including driveways, patios, and yards. Install them high up over these areas, such as on roof peaks, to give you the best view. Many floodlight cameras are hardwired for power, but there are also plug-in battery and sun-powered options in the market, like video doorbells, other home security cameras. These devices record and store video either in the cloud as part of a subscription service or locally on a micro SD card. These cameras can also differentiate between objects like people, packages, vehicles, and animals. Electronic things are QuickSet Smart Code for $180. This electronic deadbolt can be installed with just a screwdriver and earn stellar scores for resisting kick-ins and lock pits. It's not as secure as a thief with a drill, though. Doorbell cameras. The RingGen 22 2020, $100. The RingGen 22 2020 offers higher quality video and better data security than most models. It also sends notification to your phone quickly. The U5 video doorbell for $180. This video doorbell has two cameras, one pointed outward to spot visitors to your home and the other pointed down to keep an eye on any packages that are delivered. How about floodlight cams? The Google Nest Cam with floodlights is $250. It's rich with smart features. This model is unique in offering free object detection for people, animals, and vehicles. Blink wired floodlight cam at $90. This Blink floodlight camera has fewer smart features than some other options, but it excels in video quality and response time. Features include a siren. Arlo Pro 3 floodlight for $250. This camera gives you a choice of power supplies. It also runs off a rechargeable battery or a 25-foot cord sewed separately for $50. How about a letter from the new content director at the Reader's Digest, Jody L. Rohela? Push those buttons. My husband is a true techie. He works for Apple. So you think when I have a question about my phone or laptop, he'd be eager to help me, right? If you're chuckling as you read this, you know what I'm about to say. Wrong. He wants me to figure things out for myself, and mostly I do. But when I bug him for help, I usually wind up learning some trick I never knew. For one thing, we now have a shared grocery list in the Notes app. If I could just get him to remember to look at it when he goes to the store. My husband's favorite tip, don't be afraid of your devices. After all, he says, when you buy a car, you don't just sit there and wait for the salesperson to tell you what to do. You start pushing buttons and trying out features, right? Our phones, etc., are the same. The cover story, which we'll talk to later, is full of handy hints for getting the most out of your devices. From someone who knows, Chris Hoffman, who was the editor of How To Geek and now writes Windows Intelligence Newsletter. He's not the only heavy-hitter in this issue. To write about vinyl records for 13 Things, we tapped Alan Light, a musician surgelist, who has worked in Spin Vibe, Sirius XM, and more, and now has a podcast called Sound Up, with pioneering MTV VJ Mark Goodman, and Ace reporter Bill Hangley, who writes about Reader's Digest's nicest places in America, spotlights the absurdity of some homeowners association regulations. HOA horror stories. Boy, I can't wait to read that. You may remember me writing in this space before. I have a long history with Reader's Digest, beginning with an internship when I was in college. I came to work as an editor here, worked at some other places, and returned in 2017. I know that some of you have been around even longer, and we have lots of newbies, too. Enjoy this issue. Did you know that you can read it on a phone, tablet, or computer, too? But you wouldn't get to listen to me if you did that. The World of Good, Reasons to Smile. Heard any good jokes? There's an old payphone in Washington, D.C., where if you press a button, you can hear a gag like this. How does a polygamist hippie count his wives? 1 Mississippi, 2 Mississippi. The voice belongs to Don Rutledge, a teacher and the creator of the Jokes phone. Because it thought it would be fun, Rutledge, who lives nearby, bought the phone online, replaced its guts with a computer, and placed it on the street. Press 1, it's free, to hear a knock-knock joke, or number 2 for a kid's joke. Pressing number 5 plays fun facts. You can also press 0 number to chat with a random guy who thinks he has all the answers. This guy is Rutledge, who told the Washingtonian that callers often are freaked out that somebody actually answers, so they hang up. But sometimes they stay on, and I just talk to them. How about some life in these United States? A scammer called my friend's aunt, insisting he had all her passwords. If he thought he found an easy mark, he was sorely mistaken because he responded excitedly, "Hold on, honey. I need a pen and paper. Now, what are they?" Me. "Bathroom is cleaned." Wife. "Thank you." Me. "Why do we keep the toilet brush in the shower?" Wife. "What?" Me. "Why is the toilet brush in the shower?" Wife. "What are you talking about?" "The puffy thing with the handle." "My loofah!" "You named the toilet brush?" My favorite anecdote from the life in these United States was one where a woman admitted having been embarrassed herself when, after watching Game of Thrones, she asked her husband, "When did dragons go extinct?" I shared that with my roommate, and the two of us laughed and laughed. After we both caught our breath, my roommate said, "So, when did they go extinct?" The lies parents tell their tell. While we were driving, I asked my dad what purpose of the rumble strips were. He told me they were for blind drivers. Toys R Us is closed when the R is backwards. Mannequins in clothing stores were kids who didn't behave and were taken to the dungeon in the store where they were turned into mannequins. My dad told me my goldfish ran away. I think part of the reason people cry during wedding speeches is because they never heard their siblings say something kind about them. When I was a kid, our neighbors had a large bell on their porch, and every night the father would ring it loud enough so that wherever his sons were, they would hear it and come home for dinner. I thought it was a great idea and suggested to my dad we get one. My very practical father replied, "We don't need a bell. We'll just eat when they do." Two young ladies are sitting on the couch, and one says to the other, "As a Father's Day gift, I'm going to let Dad explain the Bruce Springsteen song to me." And with that, we have run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. I'm Jim Cronin, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. So long, until next week, and thanks so much for listening.